The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to John. There was a wedding at Cana in Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. Jesus and his disciples were also invited to the wedding. When the wine ran short, the mother of Jesus said to him, "They have no wine." And Jesus said to her, "Woman, how does your concern affect me? My hour has not yet come." His mother said to the servers, "Do whatever he tells you." Now there were 6 stone water jars there for Jewish ceremonial washings, each holding 20 to 30 gallons. Jesus told them, "Fill the jars with water." So they filled them to the brim. Then he told them, "Draw some out now and take it to the head waiter." So they took it. And when the head waiter tasted the water that had become wine without knowing where it came from, although the servers who had drawn the water knew, the head waiter called the bridegroom and said to him, "Everyone serves good wine first, and then when people have drunk freely, an inferior one. But you have kept the good wine until now." Jesus did this as the beginning of his signs at Cana in Galilee, and so revealed his glory, and his disciples began to believe in him. The Gospel of the Lord.
Our gospel is a little different tonight. Normally we hear stories of Jesus who might cure a blind man or restore hearing to someone who can't hear or somebody who is crippled, restoring them to be able to walk. But this story doesn't fit all of those stories, simply to provide wine at a wedding, one of his first miracles that he performed. And he did it at the behest of Mary, one of the only requests that she really made in the Gospels. But, and the story, 6 stone water jars, 25 gallons each, 150 gallons of wine. The marriage feast went on for about 7 days, and so they needed a lot. And now, the story, The Chosen, or the TV program, movie program, that's currently in production for the last couple of years, the story of Christ and his encounters with different people. I was just watching part of it this week and watched this part on the wedding feast at Cana. And in their presentation, just to kind of make sense of it, it was a mistake of the wine stewards. They didn't understand how many people were going to be there, and they misjudged, and they didn't bring enough wine. And that created the situation that there were more people than they expected. But in any event, it's a different kind of story. But we have this wedding feast, and it was important enough for Jesus to not embarrass this couple, and in a very, very simple way to present himself in this powerful yet simple way of changing this water into wine, of doing a compassionate thing for some people. Now, when we hear the scriptures, because it is about the wedding feast of Cana, our Old Testament reading is about God's relationship with his people. Isaiah is speaking about to the people who are being released from slavery and are being allowed to return home, and he's telling them how special they are. And the imagery that he uses, he doesn't just say, "You are special, God really loves you," but he says, "You are God's espoused. You are God's spouse. God is treating you like he would somebody that he loves. uniquely and totally. And that, he says, that's the love that he has for you. And he's bringing you back to complete you and to be in that close and intimate relationship with you. And that's an imagery that's used in the Old Testament a lot, of God's relationship is one like a husband to a wife, and a marriage bond that is so united, God's love for us. And so that calls to mind our own marriages, our own life, our own families, and where we are at and where what the Lord is calling us to do. And, you know, when we think of marriage, it's supposed to be such a tremendously loving and supportive kind of relationship. But so often, something happens along the way. They might say disillusionment happens somewhere along the way, that struggles begin to happen. But it seems that what we used to find unique about the person and so loving about them and so great about them becomes the cause of irritation and the cause of impatience and the cause of anxiety. And the stress of the relationship begins to wear on us. And it doesn't become as close as what it ought to be. And sometimes we simply put up with a spouse. And it's because we don't want to do anything else, but we simply decide to suffer in silence. Our children suffer because of it as well in the relationship. But it's what I'm trying to say is that what is supposed to be so great and so wonderful and so loving, and what starts to be so wonderful and so great and so loving, over the course of time, we begin to lose our focus. And instead of seeing the good in that person, instead of seeing the giftedness of that person, all we do is we focus on the bad part of the person, of the things that somehow we decide bother us. And that's all we see, that's all we hear, that's all we know, is these things that somehow we disagree with or that we allow to work our last nerve. And that's our challenge. When we listen to the second reading tonight, as Paul is speaking to his people, he reminds us of the giftedness of each person. And he says that God has blessed each one of us in a unique way. And he says it's not for ourselves, but the blessing that he's given to us is a blessing that's given for the entire community. It's a blessing that's given for our families and to help us to grow together, because not one of us is complete on our own. We need to work together to complement each other, to bring together a variety of talents and gifts, and together use them all to make something more than any one of us ever could be. And that needs to be the hope of our families, is finding again the richness of our life, the goodness of who we are, the blessedness of the relationships that we have. So often, if I talk to somebody and they mention of the struggle in their marriage or in their family, it could be struggles with parents or with children, but I might ask, you know, when was the last time you said, "I love you"? And they kind of take aback, and then they start to think, because they don't have an answer. They can't think of the last time they said, "I love you." They can't think of the last time that they've appreciated what their spouse has done, and that just brings to mind for us of what we need to do and some actions we need to take, that when we find ourselves at odds with someone or something, that we need to stop looking at that one attribute, that one thing, that oftentimes really isn't evil. It's simply something that we decide bugs us. But we need to find a way to see the goodness in that person, a way to bring out their goodness and to continue to build up that relationship again. You know, one of the ways something happens, typical, is we take our moms for granted. We take our wives for granted. We expect that they are going to provide for the family. There's always going to be a meal there, that the laundry is always going to be done, that the house is going to be clean, that the clothes are going to be clean, that everything is being taken care of. And at the same time, they're trying to raise children and they're trying maybe to hold down another job. And we simply assume that they are going to do it, that they're going to be there. And I know even as a child growing up, and probably even now, if something goes wrong or something we can't find, it's, "Mom, where is it?" As if she's supposed to know where everything is and how everything is supposed to be done and what all is going on. We depend on them and we assume that they are these superhuman women providing for us. But at the same time, we take them for granted. And you might say, when was the last time that you appreciated and told your wife not just how much you love her, but how much you appreciate what she's done, how much you thank her for what she has done, how you let her know the goodness of her life, the specialness of who she is, of letting her know that she's not being taken for granted, but she really is valued and is important in your life. And the same for the men. Sometimes we just simply assume that they're going to be there and we've let go of our expectations. But how do we support them? How do we affirm them? How do we let them know that they are appreciated in their goodness? Because so often when we do that, it changes our hearts. When I begin, instead of to remember only the bad things you do, the things that bother me, but I begin to focus on the good things that you do and the things that I appreciate and remind myself to see and to appreciate that goodness, it changes my heart. But when I begin to hear people saying that they appreciate me and that this is the thing I do and that thing I do, it changes my heart as well. And each person becomes better. They begin to be reminded of their goodness and their giftedness and the blessing of God in their life. And that's what the gospel is, I think, reminding us of tonight as we look at our relationships, as Paul reminds us of the goodness and the giftedness of us, and as God reminds us that he loves us as much as a husband loves his wife, that the unity and the total dedication of God to us is in that identity of married life, that we're reminded that our lives are special and that we need to work on it and not take it for granted. It's not going to happen by accident, but it happens because we choose and we desire to love. We desire to see the goodness in the other. We desire to help the other person to see their goodness. And we pray tonight that not only for us, but our families and for those people around us, that we are touched by God's love, and that we are able to see and appreciate and to value and to bring out God's love and God's presence in our lives and in our families and in the way that we treat one another.